The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at jwright929 ESPN. As always, we thank you for listening on either 92.9 FM or 680 AM. But if you are away from the radio dial, you can always stay up to date with everything happening here on the station. Download the Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen. You can even listen on demand with the Rewind feature. Dennis Fuller's producer of the program for us. Glad that he is with us, my company, as he is each and every Tuesday and Friday. Is, of course, the host of VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast, the number one college football pregame show in the United States of America. That is VSiN's College Football Betting Tailgate Show, airing on Saturdays at 9 a.m. Central. Of course, you can always hear them on VSiN Primetime, airing each and every weeknight. Make sure you download the new VSiN app. You can also listen for free there on Twitter, X, at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
Howdy. I'm fired up, man. It's a great week. My family, I dropped them off at the airport, so I'm by myself with my dog right now here in my office. To quote Kevin McAllister, I made my family disappear.
I made my family disappear?
I mean, I know we're going to get to it, and you were live reacting to it. I imagine it's the talk of the town. But just big picture, the Maui Bleepin' Invitational is incredible. It does not get better than that event, and here's why. You've got the best teams in the country out there, and it's not an empty gym, right? Like the Charleston Classic or some of those random ones. Like, no one's there. This is a – I've been to it. The Lahaina Civic Center, it is a – it's basically a community center. Right across the way from water, and it's always jam-packed with fans. The atmosphere is incredible. And then the way it started yesterday with Memphis upsetting UConn, the way it finished with UNC coming from like 20 down to beat Dayton 92-90.
And the Auburn game in the middle, you know?
The Auburn comes back from double digits down. Like, people were crowning Iowa State at the half. Like, the only game that was like, eh, was Michigan State-Colorado.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got Memphis, Michigan State today. You've got the two-time defending champion in the loser's bracket of the Maui Invitational. That thing, it's just – there's a nostalgic part of me, Jeffrey, that loves Chaminade being in it. But there's also part of me that's like, it's kind of okay that they're not out there.
Yeah.
Because UConn would have played Chaminade in the first round.
I'm with you. And maybe – I don't know if this is because Memphis was involved. I just felt like yesterday felt – different. Like, yesterday was a real throwback to nostalgia, because
100%.
I felt like the whole day, it's like, man, like, I know obviously with it not being in Lahaina last year, and obviously the fires and everything that's happened, but I don't know. There was something about yesterday that was like, man, this really, and maybe it's part of what I've been telling you that we put too many of these tournaments. I get them. I think there's too many MTEs. But there was just something about yesterday, the B-roll footage of Maui, everything about it. You're like, man, this really feels like it used to once upon a time.
There's no doubt, man. And like, I was in Maui last February, and I don't know if anyone's ever been to Maui and went to Lahaina. It was such a cool part of that city, of that island, I should say. And, you know, the devastation that, I mean, I was there, I guess, like, I don't know how many months after the fire, but you couldn't get to where the fire took place, but we took a boat out to go whale watching, and you look back, and it's just, it's rubble.
Yeah.
And the Lahaina Civic Center is not far away from where the fires took place. Like, it's just down the road. So the fact that it's back there, you know, they did a bunch of things during the Memphis game, and I think throughout the day, honoring Bill Walton, who used to always call this tournament as well. Like, I'm glad it played out the way that it did. Obviously, it was very enjoyable that Memphis ended up getting the win, because I would imagine you felt the same way. When that three went in at the end of regulation, it was like, oh, that's it.
Well, I mean, every Memphis fan immediately just went back to Maury.
Because they played
perfect.
Outside of fouling up three, which is a fair discussion, you can get to that. They played perfect. And Jay Billis even said it. Like, they were perfect. They switched every screen. The dude hit a fadeaway three. Like, what else can you do? And then to get Danny Hurley to get all fired up and get a tee, and that really costs him the game. And it's kind of like a little extra cherry on top. And then he's after the game, you know, calling out the officials and, you know, dropping the word back-to-back champions. It just, man, it made it feel that much better.
No, I'm with you completely. I actually think, so in real time, the no foul for on the three at the end of regulation, I think it's kind of getting discussed more theoretically than it was the actual situation. Because if you think about the situation, Diarra is kind of running around chaotically. And then it looks like he makes the decision, all right, I'm going to go to the rack. And I think at that point, Memphis was like, cool, we'll give you the layup. Because if you kind of look at how they play defense, they were going to make sure they didn't foul on the layup and give him the layup. And then it kind of just helter-skelter. He winds up just pitching the ball back to Solo. Because the only time to like actually would have fouled him would have been like around 7 or 8 seconds. And I think that's a very different thing than fouling it, you know, sub five.
And they did it right in overtime.
Correct, exactly.
They did it right at overtime. Because once he's in the air, once they're kind of running around to your point, now like he could rise up. They could, you know, even if he's not trying to shoot it, they could say he's shooting it. It gets a little weird. So look, I think the biggest, there's so many takeaways from that game, and you never want to put too much stock in a November 25th game.
Is today the biggest letdown spot of all time?
I mean, it's pretty big. But for Memphis, and I texted you this, there's no way this win is not the best win of their season.
Penny Hardaway's saying it's the best win of his career, and that includes the tournament win.
Right. Like, this is, you beat UConn for the first time since Creighton beat him in February of last year.
I believe that's also the last time I bet on them and lost.
Yeah, I had Creighton then.
I know you did.
Head to head, me winning, huh? Interesting.
We'll get there.
You had Tulane 2 weeks ago. I'm not gonna.
Mm-hmm. We'll get there. I promise I'll give you your flowers.
But no, it's whatever. I don't care about that. I just like this win when, you know, because we've been talking about it. Oh, the win against San Francisco. That's nice. But that could age poorly.
Like, same thing like a Missouri win. Like the way they beat Missouri, it passed the eye test, but you had no idea what it meant.
UConn is going to win the Big East. They're going to be at worst a 2 seed this year. Like, this team is so well coached. They've got dudes. However, I'll say this, and this isn't a knock on UConn. Aiden Mahaney is getting exposed.
Yeah, the step up. This is wow. This is where you see where why I'm always consistently. If you want to talk me into Gonzaga is always elite, okay.
Because
I'm fine.
Their dudes are different.
Correct. And that's why I've watched that league so much. St. Mary's is like the the high school football team that just plays, they execute perfectly, they're well coached. But
Army.
Man, if you get yes, exactly. But if you get them against dudes, it doesn't look right.
I really, because I saw Aiden Mahaney at St. Mary's in the conference championship game against Gonzaga last year. I was sitting right there, and I'm like, this dude's pretty legit. He can make some shots. He's got a little you know, gusto to him. And I'm watching yesterday, and what is Memphis doing? They're hunting him.
Guarding like, the hell out of him.
They're like, we're going to guard you up in your face. We're going to attack you. I'm like, whoa. This dude ain't ready for it. Now, a dude who is ready for it is that kid Liam McNeely. That kid's going to be a baller.
That like, kid was ready for it. I thought Diarra was ready for
Caravan
it.
Caravan was ready for it.
Solo like, was ready for it. I mean,
they got dudes. Like, UConn's not going anywhere. And that's just a credit to Memphis, man.
No, this like, is honestly, though, like, to your point, sometimes, like, because there's this whole question today for Memphis fans of, like, where does this win rank? And then you've got some people going, how can it be bigger than they beat Houston as the number one team in the country to win the AAC title? That's a banner. That's a trophy. And, like, I understand that. There's something about the fact, though, I mean, we can basically go back and just rehash that whole game because it was such a great game to watch. And even though it gets into the 90s, it wasn't like, man, they didn't play any defense. Both teams were guarding their asses off. It was just shot making. It was big time plays. Every game, every play in the game felt significant. And to me, that says something even more about how you'll remember the game.
And why I love that it was in the Maui as opposed to the Bahamas or wherever, because Maui still feels like a basketball game. And what I mean by that
is the sounds of the game.
The Atlantis tournament, which is going to be great, and Gonzaga's there, and there's some really big program. They play it in like a ballroom. It just doesn't, it feels like if you shoot the ball too high, you're going to hit the ceiling. Or you go to, you know, I don't know, a place in Pensacola, Florida, or something like that. There's no one there. It was a packed gym. The atmosphere was incredible. You had you had a throwback to when Penny Hardaway won the MVP of the tournament. You've got the two-time defending champion over there. It's the middle of the afternoon of Thanksgiving. Like, everything about that game was incredible. And
the only thing you were missing was bands. That's it.
Yeah. Like, I just, that game, like, I really try my hardest to not live, like, in the greatest ever moment, because we always do that so often. But, like, and I'm not saying that was the greatest game ever, but God, that game was just, that was an NCAA tournament game. Like, the intensity, the shot making, it had everything in it, you know? And, yeah.
Heck, it's going to be better than a lot of tournament games we're going to watch.
Yeah. And I hope.
On. Let's be real.
And this is going to be quite the test for Memphis today. Not only are you playing Michigan State, but you're bouncing off of this monumental victory.
Yeah.
How do you respond to that? Because your best players were getting buckets. Dane Danger was a dominant force down low. Hunter's hitting every three possible, right? I mean,
well, then
PJ Carter doesn't play the whole damn game and comes in and buries six free throws in overtime.
I mean, it was everything you like. If as a fan, it's everything that you want in a win, where it's not just one guy going off, it's a full, complete team effort. The whole game, you were in it, and you were going up against the gold standard of college basketball currently. Like, that's, to me, like, that's kind of the other aspect of, like, where you're trying to rank it and whatnot. Like, that's, I don't know, to me, like, that's for fans to decide, because some games will matter to fans more than others, and vice versa. You know what I mean? Like, it's sometimes it's like, where were you in a particular moment? It's there's other factors that impact how you would rank it emotionally. But in terms of just, okay, we know this is a quality win that will stack up. Like, to me, that was the big statement from them. But now, for Tiger fans, they admittedly, they kind of have some PTSD, not only from last year, but also, you know, the Penny Hardaway era has not reached the heights that it was promised to be so far. With that said, you can go out and you can prove that this year's different than last year by just showing up again. I'm not saying like you have to go and beat Michigan State. It's a I think they're 1.5 point dogs. Yeah, so
yeah, 2 points.
You're under, but if you'll know it, like if they show up and this game goes down to the final possession or whatever, and Michigan State wins, like there's no shame in that. But the fact that like, can you back up that big win the very next day? Can you back it up with something today? Like that will be a big sign that this year's different.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting, right? You go to overtime, you're jubilant. The only team yesterday that won and didn't really have like a craziness was Michigan State.
Yes.
And like shout out
Colorado.
Yeah, that's where you get a little bit worried. Like, look, as a, you know the way that I bet, right? This team is at the peak of, like, I love letdown spots in college football. That's a week removed. This is 24 hours removed.
And by the way, the game went to overtime and everybody was exhausted.
You're exhausted. You're making incredible shot. Like regression is just normal. So I'll be honest. Don't hate me. I have bet Michigan State. I hope I'm wrong because that was such a great win. And regardless of what happens today, no, I almost would say no matter what happens the rest of the time in Maui, they beat UConn. And Scott Van Pelt has a great saying when it comes to, you know, college basketball. How good is your good? The Memphis good is as good as there is in college basketball. Because I'll say this, sometimes you're going to get upsets. Like, UConn did lose by double digits to Creighton last year. They didn't play well. I don't think you could say that UConn didn't play well. It was tied at halftime. They battled back down double digits. And yes, there was a weird over-the-back call that probably shouldn't have been called. It's the name of the game.
Well, like either team that was going to win that game was going to need some kind of break.
Well, and like, you watched that game intently. Like there are times where you see teams and they play poorly.
Yes,
I am not saying there's no way UConn played poorly. Alex Caravan hit 4 of 8 from three. Solo Ball went 3 of 6 from three. Liam McNeely hits big threes late in the game to force overtime. Like, they did not play poorly. The only guy who played poorly is Aiden Mahaney, and I think he might be an issue the whole season. And there's a reason he didn't play in overtime.
Yeah, I think if you're like nitpicking, like if you want to be like a UConn homer, I think what you would nitpick is say we lived in that game in foul trouble. But I would also point out that's basketball.
Also, who fouled out for Memphis?
Haggerty fouled out. Jordan fouled out. Yeah,
yeah. Like they played overtime without Haggerty.
They played overtime without their point guard.
Right, and they won the game. So, look, I mean, it's not crazy to say that Memphis goes out to the island against one of the most loaded Maui fields in history and is raising a trophy. I mean, they're a 2-point dog today. If they win today, which is going to be challenging, they win today, they're playing UNC, who was down 20 to Dayton.
Well, and they've already seen them once. They played a bit of an exhibition.
There you go. So we don't want to get carried away. I think the net of it is, I think regardless of what happens from here on out, it's a successful trip out west. You beat San Francisco, you beat UConn, and now to me, it's cherry on top of what happens from here on out. Because here's also the thing. None of these, if they were to lose the next two games, none of them hurt them.
No, because now, right,
they
avoid Colorado, correct?
Exactly. Yeah, because Colorado's out.
I just didn't know, like, if Colorado somehow won, I think they flipped the bracket.
I'll double check it. I thought they just played the loser of UNC Auburn. I'll double check that.
Because the only team to me that I've seen that could be bad is Colorado. I think every other team in there is clearly a tournament team.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, like, that's a huge part of it. It's like,
think about it this way. the consolation, if the bracket is normal, and let me double check it. If the bracket's normal, the fifth place game is more than likely going to be Iowa State, who's number five, against UConn, who's number two.
All right, so I'm trying to read the bracket. All right, Memphis is in game six. But I don't, I need to figure out where game six, they're cool.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, they're cool. As long as you can avoid Colorado, that's all that matters.
And you are.
All right, wanted to get into a few things of the weekend. And we'll dub today, hashtag Tim was right. And then we're not even just talking about the Auburn game. Because I was actually fine with that playing out the way that it did, because it was game of the year. And the way that it played out, the first half, you were clearly right. The second half, I was clearly right. And then the game went to overtime.
I was thinking about texting you up 21-0 when Auburn was up 21-0. I'm like, you know what? I've mushed too many bets.
No, I think both of us did the same thing, because we didn't finally text until I finally sent out the feeler when it was tied. I was like, and all I said was, which side would you rather have? And then for those that want to know, Tim was like, don't care. Notre Dame's up 40.
That is true. Notre Dame went out there and absolutely curb-stomped the troops. No offense. So,
I mean, listen, I had that one too. But the reason why I wanted to dub really hashtag Tim was right, it's not just the game of the year win. You nailed it coming into the weekend, in which we were discussing how would pressure impact what we were going to see. And I'd pointed out, you know, in this week and years past, it kind of been like sleepy-ish, but we did correctly point out the difference was you did not, at that point, for the past 10 years, when you get to this week, there's about six teams that maybe even have a shot in the old formula, and sometimes it's not even that many. But the difference was we had more teams than ever that were playing meaningful football with real stakes on the line and playing against teams that honestly had nothing to lose. And we started in the early window, we went to the middle window, we went to the late window, and then we saw every team, even teams that were like Penn State, who gets a road win, like that wasn't exactly Penn State's best performance of the year. And we saw, to me, like that's going to be kind of the interesting question is, will that hold up again this week? Like a team that didn't really have, like with Tennessee, they're playing UTEP. UTEP couldn't really do anything about it. I'm not sure what Vandy can do at this point, but that game's on the road.
You got the underdog slayer. That is Diego Pavia.
Shout out to Brian Kelly. Oh God, he could have. I thought he was going to punch in a garbage time touchdown to cover, and he did.
You know, a quick aside, because I can't stand Ryan Day.
Oh, it's the worst when you know, like when I bet on him, it's the worst.
I knew it was going to happen. Like, and I joked on my podcast when I gave out under in that game, because Penn State, Ohio State, I bet first half under, not full game under. So I know people don't remember every moment of every game.
There was a pick six.
There was a pick six. I lost the first half under. It was an easy dead under full game. And I joked to my partner, I go, you know this game's going to go first half under, full game over.
Yeah.
And sure enough, that's the way it played out. But no, I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I thought Oklahoma would win. I bet them plus 14, but it was a weekend where I also thought SMU would struggle. They did not.
No, they did not. No, they really rose to the occasion.
But like Boise State, you know, Ole Miss, Alabama, Penn State, Texas didn't look great.
A&M.
You know, A&M loses. Colorado loses. Like, it was a weird week. And, you know, Iowa State, man, not that they're like, they're kind of back in it, but like, they're playing like the seventh string quarterback of Utah, and they've hold on for dear life against Utah. Things get weird when the pressure is on, and we'll talk more about this week, I'm sure, but like, look, I'm going to Notre Dame USC. I am horrified of that game. The spread is short. Notre Dame's been dump trucking people, and you're going out to USC. They've had a disappointing year. They would love nothing better than to knock off their arch rival, keep them out of the playoff. What about Miami going to the dome? catching 11 or laying 11 against Miami. Like, be careful, you know, be careful. What about, like, the stinkiest one of the week is, like, I could argue the most disappointing team this year outside of, like, Florida State, maybe in the top five, I won't say most disappointing, is Arizona. Arizona was like, oh, they're bringing back all this. They're bringing back the quarterback. They're bringing back, you know, McMillan, the wide receiver. They've sucked this year. They've been bad.
They've been so bad that we got reports out of Tucson that were like, listen.
We got the buyout money.
Right. They're like $300 million in debt as a university, but they might have the buyout money.
So you're telling me in a rivalry game, in a lost season, that Arizona is just going to roll over against Arizona State? And for the first time this year, Arizona State has legit pressure. They win this game, they're in the conference championship. They win this game, they've got a chance to go to the playoff. And now, basically the underdog all year long, now you've got eyeballs on you. You just beat BYU. You stormed the field, not once, but twice. So I'm just, it's college football. Things get weird, and that's why when we had the discussion last week about, well, what happens if Indiana gets blown out? Do they drop below these SEC teams? I don't know. But guess what? We don't need to know anymore because Alabama and Ole Miss both lost.
And A&M.
And A&M. Now, A&M actually still has a chance because, okay, another situation. Texas. You've beat nobody. You've gotten the benefit of the doubt the whole year. Your toughest game to date, you got your ass kicked, and now you got to go on the road to what I believe is deemed the like hottest ticket all year in college football, and you got to cover a 6-point spread, which, by the way, over the weekend, there was a 7.5 out there, just pointing that out. I think it's another weird weekend. I'll say this. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. Texas, Notre Dame, Miami, Arizona State. Over under, one of them is losing.
All right, give me the numbers. All right, so we got Miami at Syracuse. We're
11. 11
at the Dome where dreams go to die.
Yeah.
All right.
11-point. They're 11-point favorites. Miami is.
All right.
Notre Dame's a 7.5-point favorite at the Coliseum. Texas is a 6-point favorite at A&M. And Arizona State is a 9-point favorite at Arizona.
Throw Tennessee and Vandy in there.
I don't know what it is. I just can't get there with Vandy anymore.
I think I've played it out.
They're 11. Tennessee's 11. Which of the five that we're mentioning, Tennessee will 100%. Notre Dame's gonna have a pretty good contingent at the Coliseum, but Tennessee's gonna take that stadium over. Right?
Yeah, no, it's always like 60-40 orange.
I mean, it's Thanksgiving weekend too. those co-eds from Cali aren't sticking around.
It's more like New York. Most of the Vandy student body is not in state.
Exactly.
There's a lot of that. I don't know, there's something about, because like we talked about that Oklahoma-Alabama game. I kept telling you, if I just believed that Oklahoma could block enough, that I thought Oklahoma could be live in that game, because I do believe in Oklahoma's defense. I think that's a good physical defense.
As you should.
Correct. Did I think it would be to the tune of 24-3? No.
No.
I also didn't think, if you would have told me, hey, Oklahoma's going to win this game 24-3 with 60 passing yards, I would have been like, what would happen? Well, Oklahoma ran for 250.
I also didn't think, I mean, I took some plus 14 with Oklahoma, just kind of embracing the stink. I thought Ole Miss was going to beat the brakes off Florida.
Well, I did too, and that line kept going up.
Yeah.
Like, the difference is there were other games.
There was definitely sharp money on Ole Miss.
And the thing about the Ole Miss game was, you always like to reference Parker Fleming's stats of war. Ole Miss was like the number one. How bad did we get beat? Ole Miss was like the number one team, and they did not get beat that badly. And Bill Conley's postgame win expectancy, Florida had like a 26% win expectancy. Now, I also think that can contribute to exactly what we've been talking about all weekend. In the end for Ole Miss, it came down to Ole Miss was moving the ball up and down the field. They were not finishing drives, and they left that game up to chance. They also, I thought that defense came out in the second half with a different look, and they were just, like at one point, Florida was winning the game with negative 8 yards of offense in the second half. That tells you what they were doing. Ole Miss was in position to win the game, and then they dropped a punt. And then on top of that, they dropped 6 passes, 3 of which would have been touchdowns. Another would have been down to like the 2. So Ole Miss like didn't make plays. The problem with the Alabama loss is like, man, if you and I have to like recreate, okay, how could Alabama have been in that game? It's a lot more difficult than how Ole Miss could have won the game.
I don't really see a way that Alabama could have won that game. Jalen Milroe was horrendous.
I mean, I guess you would say, what if they dropped the interceptions? But you scored 3 points.
I mean, and that's the thing, man. And it's like, I'm curious what the rankings are going to look like tonight. I'm sure we'll discuss what we think they'll look like. Alabama, it was funny. I did a radio hit earlier today with a Penn State alum. And boy, I think me and him would have had gone to some blows because he was just like, he tried to lead me in a question, which was like, if Texas gets blown out, they're out of the playoff because the SEC's overrated. I'm like, dude, the Big Ten has 3 good teams. Like, what are we doing here? Like, let's pump our brakes, you know, a little bit.
Well, the reality is, because this is the thing, we are in the peak. We are in the peak of
how would you do in our conference?
Right, and also when you do other radio hits, we're peak leading questions of trying to justify our conference. So we are definitely in peak of that. The reality is, though, it doesn't matter what Pennsylvania radio thinks, what Vegas radio thinks, what Memphis radio thinks. All that matters is what that committee thinks. And I'll tell you what, I've not seen signs that the committee thinks the SEC is overrated.
I've also seen signs that they love the Big Ten. I mean,
agreed.
4 of the top 5 teams.
It's almost like maybe the 2 leagues that are kind of running the thing. It's almost like maybe they're getting the benefit of the doubt. And that brings me to before we take a break and get into the awards from last week. I am curious if these 3 lost teams are dead.
A&M's definitely not dead.
Correct.
Because they play Texas.
But let's set them aside because they have a Texas
A&M. They have a path.
Correct. Texas A&M has a path to an automatic bid. So let's set them aside.
I think the question I would pose to you, of the 3 lost teams of Alabama, Ole Miss, and South Carolina, who has the most life left?
So people want to say it's South Carolina, but I think this is going to be a real problem for South Carolina. South Carolina played Ole Miss, a team that they are going to be directly compared to.
Got smoked.
And not only got smoked with the quarterback. Like, you can kind of dismiss the LSU game.
And they lost to Alabama, too.
Correct. The problem that I have is that I think Alabama's weirdly going to be the one that's ranked the highest. And I'm sorry, like, I understand people go, don't lose to Kentucky. That's fine. It was a 3-point loss. Ole Miss has a 3-point loss, an overtime 3-point loss, and a 7-point loss in the Swamp. Like, when you get beat 24-3 in November, I do wonder if eye test is going to start to hurt Alabama.
I think ideally the committee, if you ask them,
they want Clemson to win.
They want Clemson to win, and they want both. They don't want to have to make the decision between Ole Miss and Bama, because there's a lot of, well, we beat the crap out of Georgia and you almost blew it in the second half. Well, we didn't lose at LSU and you did. Like, there's a lot of that. Well, we didn't lose at Oklahoma. We beat Oklahoma and you lost by, you know, 3. It's a lot of that. So, and I think, you know, and like you said, we got to hit a break, but people are going to be mad. And I don't think Indiana should make the playoff. Indiana's in at 11-1.
Because of the way the weekend went, yes.
They would not.
Totally agree.
If Ole Miss and Alabama took care of business, I think you could have made an argument.
I don't even think Ole Miss and Alabama had to, like, win convincingly. I think they had to win by a point.
Yeah, oh, I agree. They just need to not avoid a loss.
Yeah.
And they didn't. And I think Indiana really benefited from that evening.
Yes, I totally agree. All right, let us take a quick break. When we come back, let's recap what we thought was the best and the worst of Week 13 in college football. We do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Shopping at Robert Irwin Jewelers, Black Friday event is a holiday tradition because you can buy gifts that give gifts. The Black Friday sale is going on right now, and with every purchase of $299 or more, you can get a free gift. For example, they have the 1/5 carat diamond hoop earrings in 10 karat white gold for $549. That gets you a free pair of JBL noise-canceling headphones. You can also check out the Flexi Diamond Bangle Bracelets. If you spend $999, you will get a free Nintendo Switch. It's also, of course, engagement season. And if you spend $49.99 or more, you can get a free 85-inch smart TV with that purchase. You can also buy with confidence at Robert Irwin Jewelers with the meant-to-be guarantee. If you do what I did, which is get the custom-made diamond engagement ring, you have a full 365 days to return it, no questions asked. And they don't do that because they're scared. They do that because they're that confident that you are going to love the ring. That's what we did with my wife's engagement ring. She loves it. Connor did that with his wife's engagement ring. She loves it as well. Don't forget about free ring sizing for life, the diamond trade-up, or Robert Irwin Jewelers' free jewelry spa service for life. Black Friday sale is going on now. See store for details while supplies last. Don't forget about free financing, and they always have bigger, brighter diamonds at better prices at Robert Irwin Jewelers. 5 locations, or you can shop online at rijewelers.com. We will get more into Feast Week. Also, the Grizzlies were in action last night. Ja Morant returned to the floor. I was in attendance, so there were a few observations that I wanted to chat about with Tim when we do that. We'll do that during hour number two. But let's get into our college football awards from Week 13, a week of chaos. Tim, who was your team of the week?
Ooh. I think I could give it to Oklahoma.
Okay.
You know, it's a lot of criticism has been out there on Venables, rightfully so. It has not been a successful start to the OU tenure down there, and they beat that butt, man. That was really impressive, what we saw defensively. So there's a lot of good options out there. Could go Kansas. Thank you for once again helping us out there to the window. But I'll give it to Oklahoma. Very, very impressed by the dominant defensive performance we saw from, you know, a Jalen Milroe that terrorized LSU, terrorized Georgia in the first half. So shouts to Oklahoma. I'll give them team of the week.
Obviously, could get it out to Florida as well. I thought Absolutely. That very much. I also think Auburn could be considered in this because Auburn, they build the big lead, but they got into the same script that they've gotten into under Hugh Freeze, which is have the big lead, blow the big lead. They had every opportunity to fold up. They did not do that. I give them credit for winning that game.
Got and, a kicker who
what? Correct.
Was a student like a week ago. He had to hit some big kicks.
Third kicker of the year.
So
and he missed. He had a terrible kick early in the game.
God, I hate triple overtime.
Okay, so you're with me. I think what we had this bad habit in the late part of the 2010s, in which college football was so reactionary to what was on Twitter that we made a lot of really bad rule changes. And one of those rule changes was, oh my God, did you see how the LSU-Texas A&M game ended? Those kids were so tired, so exhausted. That was evil. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, I was in attendance when Ole Miss played Arkansas in a 7 overtime game, and that was like a game of legendary status of, man, look at all the overtimes and whatnot. The 2-point play deciding in overtime is so dumb.
It's not football.
No. Like,
the 25-yard line is already not football, but I, whatever. That's kind of – I thought Van Pelt did a whole kind of dissertation on it on his podcast. And, you know, he made a good point. In overtime, you could get sacked and still get points. Right?
Ole Miss in the LSU game, that's what happened to them. Like, they kicked a 57-yarder.
So, I don't know what the perfect overtime is. I don't think it's the NFL. I hear you could do it from the 50, but
I wish they just play 15 minutes of football.
I mean, it's like Helen Lovejoy of like, somebody please think of the children. It's like the third overtime. I'll say this too. Auburn had the ball last in first overtime, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So A&M scores, Auburn scores. At that point, I don't understand why more coaches don't go for two, because there's no rebuttal, and you're going into the second overtime in which everybody has to go for two. So in theory, your best two-point conversion is about to be played.
Did they both score?
Yeah, they both scored touchdowns.
And then they got field goals in the second one, right?
Correct.
Yeah, because Auburn had the bad call and the interference. And so that led to them kicking a field goal. You're right. Yeah. No, I'm with you entirely. If you go second, I'm cool kicking if you score first and you want to kick. Yeah. I'm fine with that.
Because your defense could get a stop or whatever.
If you are the team that scores second, I will never understand why you don't go for two. You've got to go for two the next timeout anyway.
Yeah. Who is your team of the week?
I kind of was impressed with Arizona State, man.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Like,
dude, how about this? Arizona State on a Thursday in early September.
Yep,
was a 3-point underdog at Texas State. They won the game. They were a 3-point, and now they are one win away from the Big 12 championship. They're two wins away from the college football playoff, and they were a road dog at a Sun Belt school. Week one, everyone bet Wyoming, including me, like they knew the damn outcome, and they curb stomped the Pokes. They're impressive, man. Kenny Dillingham, tip of the cap to you, sir. You've done an amazing job down there.
Yeah, you know, they kind of were in the same spot where it's like they build up the big lead, and then BYU makes this like heroic second half comeback, and you still make the plays to win the game. I had no problem with the premature field storming, because I think it's very different than when Ole Miss rushed the field against Georgia. Ole Miss rushed the field, there were still 16 seconds on the clock. At least when the Arizona State kids rushed the field, it was triple zeros. We had to go back and put time on the clock, but on the clock on the game field, it was triple zeros. Okay, I didn't think that was a problem. I didn't have a problem with that.
Could we also give Arizona State a little bit of the dumpster fire of the week because of whatever that was? They had the ball at the 3-yard line, and then they started running backwards. They lost 26 yards and then 39 yards. And then they tried to throw it out of bounds, and BYU throws heat on them, and they have to throw it out too fast. I'm like, what are you doing? Like,
so they were obviously terrified of kicking a field goal. They were trying to, the only problem that I had with it was the execution of the chunking. They were trying to run around because they didn't have enough, there was not enough time to where they could truly just take knees. But there also comes a point where it's like, man, if you can't execute an extra point, essentially, like, well, what are we talking about here? I mean, I do think they were trying to make sure that BYU didn't get the ball back, but the last play was the one that was the problem.
And I get that, you know, the field goal, a la Cowboys Commanders craziness, would have still allowed BYU
to technically get the ball back.
Yeah, so it wouldn't have clinched the game, but, like, there's got to be a better way. Got to be a better way. But, no, I'm with you, man. The Big 12 is doing exactly what we expected the Big 12 to do, be absolute, utter chaos. And Oklahoma State, ladies and gentlemen, was, like, the chic Big 12 champion.
Yeah.
They have zero conference wins. Utah was the favorite going into the year. They have a conference win. The two favorites, Kansas State was.
Kansas State was up there too.
So the
Remember you got asked on a Kansas radio, or you got at media days. You were with that guy that was like, how does
Avery Johnson not win the Heisman?
They're gonna go 8-4.
I don't know. He's a young kid who's playing for Kansas State.
Very much enjoys throwing it to the other team.
Utah and Oklahoma State are combined 1-15. Like, this conference, thank you. I love you, Big 12. Never change.
So I was texting with Topmeyer on Saturday night because we were laughing about how neither one of us felt like Alabama or Ole Miss would lose. And boy, were we wrong. We were laughing about how wrong we were. But I was like, you know what? Because obviously he does, even during the summer, he still does the show. I was like, maybe this is a lesson to us. Blake and Jeffrey in July are very smart. Like, in this weird way, we've taken this dramatic, circuitous route, and I get it, there is still football left to be played. But let's kind of look where we are. In the Big Ten, we're back down to Ohio State and Oregon. Georgia and Texas are the likely SEC championship matchups. The Big 12 has delved into chaos. We've kind of done this weird, like adventurous college football route, but we are set up to be like right where we thought we'd be.
I agree. We predicted that Penn State will be the team that benefits the most from the expanded playoff.
Yes.
Penn State, what'd they do? They're 10-1. They won every game they're supposed to win. They lost the game they were supposed to lose. Classic Penn State. And all they got to do is beat Maryland, and they're going to get a home playoff game. It is funny because it has been a chaotic year, but I think the way that you put it is kind of an interesting way, because who was the preseason G5 favorite? Boise State.
They had the best odds of making the playoff of every
10-1. Yep. Right? They have to win out. Do I think they will? I don't know. They play UNLV, Fresno State. Thank you very much. Helped them out, helped us out to get a little better game.
It helped out college football fans, because if that was going to be Colorado, that was going to be awful. Because you and I both know that team's not any good.
No, we're not good.
Now, there is still the problem of UNLV has, like, Boise State heebie-jeebies.
I'd just rather see that team out there.
They're a much more formidable foe. All right, dumpster fire of the week. A lot of ways we could go with this. I think, with all due respect, and I know it's basketball season, I think I'm going with North Carolina, because let's take a look at what has happened to North Carolina and Mack Brown this year. We had the weird, did he retire at halftime of the Duke game? Yeah. He then says, no, I didn't retire. The team wanted me back. Last week, Mack is saying, I'm coming back for next year. And then today, we learned that North Carolina says, no, Mack, you're not coming back. You're fired. By the way, you're coaching on Saturday. I can't tell. Normally, when you get this situation, it makes me want to go load up on NC State. Is this the one win one for Mac?
I think the players like him.
I kind of do too.
So I was gonna bet NC State because they're old. The old 5-6 get to bowl eligibility, but like, I don't know how motivated are they, and that was pretty wacky. Needless to say that.
I mean, I also thought about Alabama's offense.
It was bad.
I mean, to me, it's like, okay, you can put Ole Miss in there, but it's like, I don't know, man. Ole Miss got into another one-score game, and maybe because he went 5-0 in one-score games last year, you're not winning them this year. And I didn't feel like they were a dumpster fire. Like, I felt like they played well enough to win until it got super crunch time, and then I think they absolutely turtled.
I don't know if this is the most college football moment or the dumpster fire, but Lane talking about how he didn't want to play in the SEC championship game and then losing.
Well, and then Florida. Then just like doing every radio hit, like they were feeling themselves going into that game.
So it was Colorado, man. I wouldn't say they were a dumpster fire. I think Kansas is just a better football team. Devin Neal, monster.
And it was kind of that same script. Kansas jumped up on them. Mm-hmm. Colorado, I thought, got back in the game. And then Kansas, man, they kind of done what they've Kansas is a team that improved as the year went on, and largely what they improved on was they stopped sucking in late game situations and they started putting people away.
If there was, if we restarted the season today, would Kansas win the Big 12?
Well, I think if you did this, like if instead of having these 250 possible scenarios for the Big 12, like if they just played a tournament, does anyone want to play Kansas?
No, of course not.
No, I'm with you that.
I was texting with a buddy of mine who's much smarter gambler than I am, and he was like, Kansas, he's like, the value's gone on Kansas. I was like, I get it. But those good fellas that got me the window three straight weeks, I can't let them down now.
Yeah, the problem was they lost me so much money the first 6 weeks.
You got to win it all back.
They're still, let me tell you what, they are still very much in the red. Very much in the red. All right, my Heisman of the week, speaking of Kansas, I'm giving it to Devin Neal. Dude was awesome on Saturday. 37 carries, 207 yards, three scores. Also added 80 yards and a score through the air. He was phenomenal. And it was against Travis Hunter, Colorado. Like, to me, it's like that was a heck of a performance.
Yeah, that was absolutely just ungodly, his performance. If you just want to go straight numbers, how about Kyle McCord throwing for 470?
Well, it's part of the reason why, because if everyone's seen it, Tim just put the question out on Twitter. He gave the four games. Who do you think's the least likely, or who's the most likely to not cover, to not have the big line? Kyle McCord against Miami. Like, Miami's been pretty loose in that secondary. Pretty leaky.
Oh, yeah. I made two bets on Sunday. Syracuse plus 10.5. You can get a better number now. And there were a couple shops throwing out sevens on Texas A&M. And I immediately grabbed that. That's down at 6. Still would probably play it. But those are my first two bets of the week. And, you know, I talked about UConn last week being in a sandwich spot. I was as upset as I was about the overhitting in Ohio State and Indiana. Let's just say I didn't boast about UConn covering. I was like, ooh, I was pretty lucky to get that backdoor cover there. Syracuse was better. And I think Syracuse is going to give Miami a run for their money.
All right, my most college football moment of the week. Did you fire on San Jose State on Friday?
No. What I did, though, I was really annoyed at myself. I was watching the game, and UNLV punted. They were down like 3, and I looked at the live line. It was like UNLV money line minus 110, and I was like, that looks juicy. And then it got to like minus 140. I'm like, nah, I'm not going to play it. And then they won by 11.
Yeah. So I hope everybody knows Walter Getz. He was the San Jose State quarterback. I don't think I've seen this stat line, Tim.
Yes, it's pretty good.
He was 4 of 22 for 81 yards. I will say this, though. He took care of the football. One touchdown, no interceptions. But 4 of 22, and there was weather. It wasn't great. But that was one I was not expecting to see on a Friday night. It was a little jarring.
Have you heard the friend Fernando Mendoza?